This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
More in the second hour. Chris Harrington is going to join us next. I want to tell you about Robert Irwin Jewelers. They've got this remarkable sale going on. It's their slim down sale. We're all trying to slim down. Let's be honest. They're trying to slim down their inventory as well. And they're doing it with this highly entertaining sale, which involves they've put a born-on date on every single piece of jewelry in the store, okay? And the earlier the born-on date, the more of a discount you get, from 30 to 70% off everything in the store. Here's how it works. You walk in, you find the piece of jewelry that most dazzles you, and that will be hard because there's a lot that will dazzle you, okay? You then pick it up, you look at it, whatever, and you find the date of the item on the jewelry, and depending on the date, you get a discount. So, 1.5-carat diamond Halo engagement ring is normally $11,813. But you say, what's the born-on date here? You look at the born-on date, you check it against the chart, and you say, oh my goodness, this one's 70% off because it's been there for just a little bit. So 70% off, you will get an $11,183 engagement ring for $3,544. That is over $8,000 off. Obviously, best pieces will go first. Different items in different stores. So get in there and go on your own treasure hunt at Robert Irwin Jewelers through this Sunday, January 20th. See how much you can save. Remember, it's in-store only, and items will differ by location. Free financing, up to 60 months to pay. Get your bigger, brighter diamonds at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They got 4 locations this week. You better check them all. Bartlett, South Haven, Wolf Chase Galleria, and Perkins across from Laurelwood. When we come back, Chris Harrington's going to join us. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
10:05 is the time. As the introduction suggested, Jeffrey Wright stepping in for Jeff Calkins, who has gone off to the fabulous Memphis University School to deliver a chapel announcement. It's the start of the 10 o'clock hour, so that means it's time for the Chris Harrington segment. Let's do it.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, over at the Daily Memphian, has written a decision tree about Marc Gasol. He's also got another edition of Food Fight. Before we get to all that, Chris, what are we listening to?
That is, I'm Shipping Up to Boston by the Dropkick Murphys in honor of the Grizzlies, who are doing just that this evening.
We will get into the Boston matchup here momentarily, but wanted to start here Chris, how many words was your Marc Gasol decision tree piece?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't word count it. Probably about 3,000.
It is tremendous. If anyone has not read it yet, I highly recommend you go over to the Daily Memphian, subscribe, and check out this piece. So let's start here with what I think, as you've mentioned, Jeff's probably mentioned it, one of the biggest misconceptions thus far for the Grizzlies this year, in particular Grizzlies fans, as it pertains to the obligation to give Boston the pick. How significant do you think it is for the Grizzlies this year to get rid of the obligation?
I mean, I think it's trickier maybe than the way we've come to talk about it. I mean, I think I first started whispering like they want to get off the pick like a year or so ago, and now it's sort of emerged and sort of a refrain, sort of a truism, at least within Memphis. Some people follow the team closely, and it's certainly true that is if they're not, they would prefer to do that by making the playoffs, which is probably not going to happen. In the absence of making the playoffs, giving up that pick is actually not their first preference. Their first preference would be jumping up into the top two. I think, you know, if you gave them a choice of jumping up into the top two and then still owing Boston the pick, they would take the risk of owing Boston the pick. My sense is that they would much rather not have the sixth, seventh, eighth picks in this draft, you know, takes a hit of missing out on that pick in order to take the Boston obligation off their books. How do they feel if it's three, if it's four, if it's five? I don't really know the answer to that. I don't know where the breaking point is. And so it is, generally speaking, the preference of the franchise to get off of that obligation this summer in what I think they and everyone believes to be a mediocre draft and remove the worst-case scenario of giving up a better pick and a better draft down the road, and sort of to get on with their lives without worrying about it anymore. But it's not to me, it's not totally obvious. You can argue it the other way, and I have a mailbag coming up later today where someone asked me that question, and I sort of get into it. You can make the case for wanting the pick now because you may want to add another young player with Jaren Jackson right now, and sort of instead of sort of playing this waiting game, sort of get on with your life and sort of start building that young talent now instead of waiting to build it. And so I think it's sort of a tough thing. But the big thing is that they have more control over giving up the pick than getting the high pick. Like, if they would prefer the one or two, like, that's great, but there's nothing they can do to really make that a likelihood. Whereas they do have some level of control over avoiding the worst case scenario, which is avoiding having to give Boston a good pick and a good draft a year or two down the road.
How much would, if they are, say they're unable to get outside of the top eight and they keep their draft pick, how much would that handicap what they do in the future if they were still obligated to give the pick to Boston?
Well, I mean, it would, if you want to trade future first-round picks, which I think they don't want to do, but in theory, if you wanted to try to, you know, trade draft assets, it's harder to do that if you owe, and so it does remove that bit of flexibility from you. And it's just, you know, to me, it's the opportunity cost of the player you don't get. It's the player you don't get with the fifth pick in 2020 because you give that pick to Boston. Or it's the player you don't get with the third pick in 2021 because you give that pick to Boston. And the opportunity cost of the player you don't get is greater than the value of the player you do get this summer. That's sort of what it boils down to, right, when you're game planning it out. Like, you want the picks you keep to be more valuable than the one pick you know you will be giving away. You can never have certainty about that, but the best estimation of that is that if you know you're losing a pick in the next 33 years, the least valuable of those picks will probably be this summer's pick unless you jump up. And so that's the essential calculation.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. He has written a Marc Gasol trade decision tree over at the Daily Memphian. It is a fantastic read. I cannot recommend it enough. Make sure you go subscribe to the Daily Memphian and check that out. And then I wanted to ask you this. So let's say if you took the extreme approach and you took the idea of, all right, let's blow it up, and you find whatever the deals are for Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, you get rid of them and you strip it down to the bare bones. How bad could this team be?
You mean like this season?
Yes.
I don't think you have – you're five games back of Atlanta, which I think is in the fifth spot, sixth spot, whatever. To me, five games is a lot of ground to make up or lose, however you want to think about it, in less than half of a season. And so I think it's very I think Grizzlies have moved up or down. You know, that the if you were to take a thon,
right,
they're about, you know, there's only one more spot for them to move in terms of moving up towards, you know, the best draft odds. And so I don't think – I think no matter what you do, you're close to your nadir in that regard. You really have one team to pass. I don't see them catching, you know, Atlanta and the team's worse than Atlanta in less than half the season.
And then in terms of just positioning yourself to be ninth or better in the traditional sense, how likely do you think it is for the Grizzlies to maintain to where they can enter the lottery? If they don't make the playoffs, they can enter the lottery somewhere between 9 and 14.
I actually think it's quite likely. I mean, you're talking about at that point, you're like one game or half a game out of that right now amid the worst stretch of play you've had all season. Your schedule is going to lighten up. It's going to lighten up starting Monday, really. I mean, you got this back-to-back this weekend that you're probably going to lose both sides of. And after that, your schedule the rest of the way is a lot easier than it's been so far. I don't think it's easy enough to get you back in the playoff race because I don't think they can play well enough to do that, even with an easier schedule. But I fully expect the Grizzlies to have a better record between Monday and the end of the season than they've had over the past month and a half. Like, that is my expectation. They will have a better record. Probably still a losing record, but a better record. And so if that's the case, if you set the 9 seed as like your playoff race, right? Like, that's
sure.
Your goal. I think that's a race, quote unquote, you can be in, you know, going into April, basically. And so I think it's quite possible. This idea that, well, they can't finish outside the top 8, I don't understand that at all. Of course they can. I mean, they're only half a game off of it now, despite losing 9 in the last 10 games.
How much of this performance that we've seen since Thanksgiving, I believe, where they're 7-20 since Thanksgiving, how much of it is a reflection of how the Grizzlies are playing or how, you know, good or bad the Grizzlies may be, and how much of it is a reflection on, hey, their schedule got tougher?
Well, I think the schedule is a part of it, certainly, but it's not the predominant factor. The predominant factor is, you know, that they started taking hits and then it started to snowball on them, right?
Sure.
I think they have shown less resiliency than they would like to than they talk about having. For all the talk of the grit and grind and the toughness and everything else, they have not been particularly resilient. And that has made a bad situation worse. And so I think the schedules, they were set up to be worse than their start based upon players coming back down to earth and the schedule getting harder. But it has been worse than it needed to be because of that lack of resiliency, maybe that lack of creativity because of some of the injuries they've taken. You know, it could still completely unravel if they let it. But because the schedule lightens up, like, you know, and Kyle Anderson will come back, you know, they should be able to be a more competitive team, you know, the couple of weeks leading up to the All-Star break and after the All-Star break, if they can focus on that.
Talking with Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian at Harrington NBA for his NBA Twitter account, at Chris Harrington for the other Twitter account. And then, as you've laid out quite well on your piece, if you want to trade Marcus Gasol, you have to have a trade partner. You can't just announce that you want to trade him. And there seems to be some confusion. I don't know if that's the appropriate word. There seems to be some uncertainty about what Marcus Gasol's trade value would be. But in terms of teams that would be interested, who are some teams that make sense for the Grizzlies as an actual trade partner if they elected to actually go down that road?
I mean, it's hard to know. At this point, it's all – I mean, no one – there's been zero reporting on teams interested in Marcus Gasol in terms of specific named teams.
Right.
And so it's purely speculation at this point. I think the obvious things you look for are teams that are trying to win now. And that doesn't necessarily mean winning a title. The teams that are trying to win now who could upgrade at center, who have some need at center. And that gets you, that cuts out about half the league, but at least plenty of teams. You know, you're just guessing. Like Toronto is a team that I've always thought maybe.
Sure.
Because he's a better true center than anyone they have. They're obviously trying to win right now. But they've been so good at playing small. Are there teams that are just desperate to make the playoffs, right? Is Detroit desperate to make the playoffs? Is Charlotte desperate to make the playoffs? Are those teams that would entertain it? It is pure speculation looking at rosters at this point.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. He has written a Mark Gasol trade decision tree piece over at the Daily Memphian. Make sure you go and check that out. And then I think one of the questions that you pose, and I think it is one of the most important questions, what do the Grizzlies want from all of this?
Well, that's the other question. I mean, the biggest question that I have is, would the Grizzlies want Gasol back on a multi-year extension at the right price if he would come back for a multi-year extension? And I don't know the answer to that. You know, if you gave them, obviously they don't want him back, you know, for the same money he's making now for the next 4 years. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. But if he were to take a market value pay cut and re-up for enough, you know, 3 more years, is that something the Grizzlies would even want? Or do they sense it's time just to move on to a totally different direction? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't have a feel for that. I do not assume it's the former. I do not assume that they definitely want him back. In fact, I have it on pretty good authority. They have not offered him an early extension, which, legally speaking, they could have already done.
Is that uncommon?
No, I think extensions are more likely to happen, you know, in the summer ahead of free agency than in the middle of the season. I mean, it's not impressive. Lou Williams did this last season. He signed an extension right about now with the stay of the Clippers instead of going into free agency. The Grizzlies' history with extensions has been later. They've done it before. Both of the Zach Randolph contracts were extensions ahead of free agency. The first one was done during the playoffs, and the second one, was done, it was actually the day that they introduced Jordan Adams as their draft pick. Free agency was about to start in a couple of days, and before it got to that point, they did a contract extension with Zach. So the Grizzlies have a history of doing those extensions, but they haven't done one in season.
And then I think a fascinating question. We started to see, you know, Mark Stein's tweet about whispers that were making the rounds is that Mark Gasol would likely become a free agent, or that was becoming a common belief. And I don't know if you can answer this, but typically when you see those types of nuggets, it's usually coming from either the player side via his representation, or it's coming oftentimes from a team that's somewhat trying to dip their toe in the water, test a thought out PR-wise to see what the reaction would be. Do you get any sense of which direction that was more of likely to come from?
I don't know where it came from, but that's not the first place that I've heard that. That's not the first national expression of that sort of hunch, right?
Sure.
So that has been a working assumption by people. I don't want to speculate on where it might have come from or might not have come from. My own sort of, I'm doing a mailbag, and I'll have this in the mailbag here in an hour or so. But if I had to make my own prediction today, it is that. I would predict, and I don't feel strongly about it. It's like a 60% prediction, right? It's barely above even. I would predict that he will not be traded in the next 3 weeks, but that he will not be with the Grizzlies next season. That would be my prediction today.
If he's making a truly financial business decision, is the best decision to opt in?
The best thing for him would be to extend, probably, which would mean opting in to next season, then adding years onto it.
Yeah,
depending on the dollar value. I don't think ultimately, I will be surprised if it's a simple 1 year thing for him. If it's just he opts in, he's 1 year deal. I think he would want a multi-year commitment, whether it's here or somewhere else, if he can get it. I think he can. So that's what I expect. I don't think it will be a financial driven decision for him. And I wrote this in the piece. I think ultimately the range of financial outcomes is not going to be that different whether he stays or goes somewhere else.
So if he indeed is no longer a Grizzly after this season, what would that mean for Mike Conley?
Well, I think a lot of the same questions we have about Marc Gasol would turn to Mike Conley if Gasol exited. And it would be, what do you want? What do the Grizzlies want, right? Like, this is a period of transition. Do you want to transition with it? Or do you want to go somewhere that's in a different place competitively that's more in line with your age? And different players have answered that question in different ways. There are teams that have sort of – there are players who have gone through the downturns to stay with their organization. You know, Dirk Nowitzki is a classic example. More often, when the competitive trajectory of a team sort of, you know, diverges from where a player is in their career, a significant player, more – historically, there's more likely to be a separation. And so I think all the same questions that we have around Marc Gasol right now transfer immediately to Mike Conley the second that Marc Gasol is no longer a Grizzly, if and when that happens.
How much do you think how the Grizzlies finish this year and whether or not they keep the trade, whether or not they are able to keep the draft pick obligation will impact what they do moving forward with Mike Conley?
You know, I think the thing that would really change things is if they got lucky in the lottery, right?
Sure.
If you jump up and get a top two pick and you're pairing one of those two guys or Jaren Jackson Jr., then that's the thing that radically changes sort of the way you're thinking about your team.
Right.
And my guess would be that would make you even more aggressive to a rebuild, because now you got your core, let's go. And the app, you know, but I don't know. It's too complicated to all the answer, you know, on a radio show, to be honest with you. But the other thing would be, at that point, you still owe them the pick. And so does that give you more pressure to stay competitive? Does that make you keep Mike Conley?
Right.
I don't know. It's complicated.
No, I mean, that's the thing that I think whenever anyone wants to talk about this, it's like I don't think people are grasping how many moving parts and how many things impact later decisions. Like, I don't know. As you succinctly said last week, it's just a mess. All right, and then on to the actual basketball games tonight. The Grizzlies taking on Boston, about an 11-point underdog tonight in Boston. I'll phrase it to you this way. How close is Boston to being the team that many people thought they were going to be coming into the season?
It seems like there's been three or four times this season where it seemed like they were figuring it all out and then things sort of go awry again. Obviously, they haven't been quite what people expected. The young players did not take, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum did not take quite the leap forward. Gordon Hayward hasn't made it all the way back. There's been chemistry issues. I still think their upside is as high as any other team in the East, and I think they have a chance to come out of the East. But I think there's four or five teams at this point that have a chance to come out of the East. From the Grizzlies' standpoint, of the two games they play this weekend, I think they are highly likely to lose both. But I think they have a better chance tonight than they will tomorrow night at Toronto.
In terms of what you've seen just for this year, do you like Milwaukee's roster better to try and come out of the East, or do you like Boston's?
Man, that's a tough question, because history tells you the best player is the way to bet in the playoffs, and Milwaukee has the best player. I think I would probably lean slightly on Milwaukee in that standpoint right today, just because they are playing well, and they've been playing well all season, and there's less mystery about whether you're getting the good Milwaukee or the bad Milwaukee. They seem to be pretty secure in what they are.
And then lastly, the other team, of course, that would be significantly factor into that conversation. Now that we're starting to see, you know, we've crossed the halfway point, how close is Toronto to being a legitimate threat to the Warriors?
I think Toronto and Milwaukee have probably been the best teams in the NBA this season.
Yeah.
I think I would still pick the Warriors to win the title. But, you know, over time, it's hard for teams to sustain it. And teams tend to wear down. They seem to get tired, you mentally and physically, when you add long playoff run after long playoff run after long playoff run. And then with the Warriors, you add on to that they have less depth than they've ever had in this run. So I would still pick the Warriors, but I feel like they are more vulnerable. Yeah, I say than they've ever been. Obviously, there's one of those years where they didn't win, where Cleveland beat them. But to me, they feel more vulnerable going into playoffs now than they have in any year since they became a title team.
Do you feel like there's any team in the West that can go in a seven-game series and beat them?
I'm more skeptical of that. I do think if the Warriors are the best team in the league, projecting out,
sure.
I think the next teams in the next teams on that list are in the East. I don't believe in Denver at all in the playoffs. If you ask me who the second best team is in the West in the playoffs, I think it's either Oklahoma City or this will sound crazy or Utah. Who is eighth right now, but I think they're like two games out of third. It wouldn't shock me
correct.
If they got all the way up to
games.
Second.
They're 6.5 back from the Warriors, and they're 4.5 back would be 4.5 back would be third.
And I forgot the Rockets. And if the Rockets can get healthy, if they get Capella and Chris Paul and everyone healthy, then maybe the Rockets are the other team too. I think the Rockets, Thunder, and Jazz, those are the three teams that would have a punchy chance. I don't believe Denver really has a chance. But I would feel more strongly about the Warriors coming out of the West than I would about the Warriors winning the title.
Chris, we always appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, man.
He is Chris Harrington, of course, of the Daily Memphian. He has an outstanding trade decision piece on Marc Gasol over at the Daily Memphian. It is a fantastic read. I cannot recommend it enough. He also has a food fight piece between Quick Check and Sam's Deli up also at the Daily Memphian. We'll stick with the Daily Memphian theme. We'll go back to the Tigers when we come back. Jonah Jordan joins the program next. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
10:31 is the time. I'd like to remind you, make sure you're listening at the top of each and every hour, 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. for your chance to win $1,000. It's new money in the new year. Make sure you're listening to 99 FM ESPN for your cash code. Text that cash code to 72881 for your chance to win. Jonah Jordan joins us now. Jonah, of course, covers the University of Memphis for the Daily Memphian. You can go follow him on Twitter at @_JonahJordan. Jonah, let's start here. What exactly does it mean if you're going to try and wear throwback jerseys?
Well, I guess it means you're going to do it. They just put it on Twitter that they will be wearing the retro throwback jerseys tomorrow against, or no, Saturday against SMU. Well, I guess that is tomorrow. It looks like they're going to be wearing the ones that Penny wore, I think. The old Memphis State with the Memphis on the bottom and the State with the number in the middle.
Wouldn't it be great if they wore, like, old-school throwbacks, but then you had to wear, like, the short shorts with it? You know, go all in.
I was wondering the same thing. I kind of want them to.
Well, it is funny how, like, anything that was once popular kind of starting to come back around. They're not going like the old school, like tight short shorts.
No nut huggers.
But kids today, those shorts are getting a lot shorter. And like you're starting to like notice, like, okay, when originally the longer, baggier shorts became like the new thing that all the cool kids were doing, like the only thing to go is like you've got to shorten it up. And so it's so funny to me watch guys check in today and then roll their shorts up and then tie them.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I always went for the longest pair of shorts. Like I'd have shorts below them, like super, super, super long. And now people seem to be like Kareem Brewton rolls one leg of his shorts up, and it seems like they're going shorter and shorter. So I don't know. I guess you're right. I guess it's like what the cool kids are doing. I'm out of the loop.
See, this was the problem for me when I could actually play basketball. I've never been tall. And the longer my shorts were, the shorter I looked, and I wasn't tall to begin with, so it was really just digging a hole even deeper.
Oh, yeah, and the worst was when you were just given the shorts at school, and just gave them to you.
Nothing
and then
fit.
They were all the way down to my calf, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to roll these up.
Yeah, it was definitely a statement. And then in terms of what the – I mean, let's be real. All jersey stuff, it's all about what the kids think. Are they excited about these?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jeremiah Martin talked about it yesterday. He said that he'd always wanted to do it because when he was a kid, he got to watch Joe Jackson and all those guys wear the throwbacks. They wore the 1970s throwbacks that Larry Finch wore under Josh Pastner. They wore them to honor Larry Finch. I don't know how well those I know the fans loved them, but I don't know how much the players liked them because they were heavy. They were really they sweat through them. They're hot. It took a lot of getting used to, I think. And they never really brought them back. So I'm interested to see how these newer ones, it looks really like the Memphis State ones from the 90s are coming back, and I want to see how the players react because Jeremiah Martin was ecstatic.
And then I wanted to ask you this because Jeff and I discussed it at the top of the show, and I feel like you might have a better sense. How many people do we think, you know, fans in the building, how many are going to have Memphis State stuff? Because it does seem to be it's either a novelty item or it's something that people even maybe throw away. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like you probably kept your Memphis State stuff from 1975.
Well, you know, they started selling it again.
That was what I told Jeff. I think the bookstore sells a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, they sell so much of it that, it's insane. Like, I see people wearing brand-new Memphis State clothes pretty consistently when you're walking around the University of Memphis. It's still pretty popular. I think people really like the old mascot. People like the retro look. And, I mean it's a cool-looking shirt. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people – I want to see how much of the older gear we see. People were tweeting at me yesterday about it and saying, oh, well, we have – or people tweeting me pictures of their old gear. It was really cool. But I don't know how many people actually have that. I think we will see a lot of newer Memphis State gear rather than the older.
I can't tell – what it would say about you. I can't say I wonder if it would be a good thing or a bad thing if you kept your, say you had Tiger gear from 1975 and you still have it in 2018. Is that, or 2019. Is that a cry for help or is that cool? Because I wonder if I went to my parents' house, could I find some of my, the Tiger stuff my dad had when he was 13. I'm hoping not.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Yeah, that seems kind of excessive. I don't know if that'd be cool or just kind of creepy.
Yeah, or do you have a hoarding problem? One or the other, you know what I mean?
it may be a problem.
Do we need to bring in, I don't remember what channel Hoarders was on, but do we need to bring in a film crew? Because I'm going to bet if you still have some of that stuff, you might not be great at throwing away things.
Yeah, no, I can't count on one hand the amount of stuff I have from when I was 13. It may just be baseball cards at this point, and I probably would be considered crazy for having all those still.
Yeah, for the record, I am somewhat projecting here because as someone who isn't the world's greatest at throwing away things, because you never know, if you might need, I might need that polo that I wore when I was 13 and kind of chubby. You never know. I'm just not big on throwing things out. But let's get to the actual game at hand. This will be the first of three teams that the Tigers will play that will be inside of KenPom's top 100. What's the matchup look like for the Tigers with SMU?
So last year they really struggled with SMU to Jamal McMurray, basically. Jamal McMurray is good. He is a guard who can shoot the ball. He plays really fast. He's a really big matchup problem for this team, and I don't expect that to stop tomorrow. They're excited because they said Alex Homex is coming back, and that he's their best perimeter defender, but that bar isn't necessarily high right now. I mean, McMurray's shooting 43% from the field, 40% from three-point range, and he's shooting 80 a game. I mean, it's going to be a problem tomorrow. I mean, he could very well win this game for SMU. I know they're a little banged up, but they can play small. Their bigs can stretch the floor, and that is also giving the Tigers problems. I mean, I think they are at their best when they go small, but, that defense does get worse when they do so. So I'm interested to see how all that fits together tomorrow.
That was actually – you lead me into my next question. How much of the Tigers' rebounding struggles, how much of it is correctable, and how much of it is, hey, man, they go small a lot?
Yeah, well, I just think they're a bad rebounding team. I don't know how much of it is correctable. I think they could get the guards in there, but realistically, how much is 5'7 guard Tyler Harris going to be able to rebound? I mean, if we're talking in realistic terms, I mean, it's not a lot. I think that Alex Lomax being back will help a little bit, but, I mean, their bigs just aren't good rebounders. I mean, Mike Parks is struggling on the boards. Keevan Davenport can grab 10 a game, but, I mean, then – you know, he kind of disappears because, I mean, there's only so many rebounds one person can grab. He can only play so much. I mean, Rainier Thornton's taking a step back in rebounding. Isaiah Maurice isn't a good rebounder. He's not great at boxing out. So, I mean, I think that Maurice can get better, but, I mean, for the most part, I think that this is probably just who they are.
Who do you think is – for the Tigers to be successful tomorrow, who do you think for sure needs to play well?
Tomorrow they really need Tyler Harris to play well. They need him to go off. They need that. If Tyler Harris and Keevan Davenport go off tomorrow, they'll probably win, and I bet they win by double digits. I think you're going to get what you get from Jeremiah Martin. You're going to get his 15 to 20 points. But he's going to take some shots, and he's going to probably turn the ball over three or four times. That's what you're hitting. You need Keevan Davenport and Tyler Harris to come in and play as best they can. You'll win by double digits.
What have you made of Antoine Jones' recent form?
I just think it's the same thing as Tyler Harris. I mean, I think it's a long season. You just got to end your first summer break ever, starting your first conference play ever. You're probably looking around a little bit. You're probably not doing what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, Penny said as much that they're not doing what they need to do. That's why they kind of got benched, is that they haven't necessarily taken the right steps in practices. So, I mean, I think it's just a learning process for those freshmen. I think most freshmen deal with this at this time of the year. It's not anything shocking.
What have you made of Kevon's year?
Kevon is an interesting case.
Go on.
I think he is the, without a doubt, the best player on the team. I don't think it's really a question. I think he can be one of the better players in the American Athletic Conference, and then he can disappear for long stretches of games. If he could put together a really good, consistent, where he's putting up 20 and 10, which I know he can do. I know he can do it. And he doesn't disappear. We could be talking about him as a second-round draft pick.
Wow.
Really?
Yep.
What position?
That is the problem. I don't know. He's a little bit of a tweener. He'd really have to go into NBA camps, which I know he's going to do. I think he could go in there if he shoots the lights out. He could make a case for a stretch four at the low end of the second round, but right now I think that's what he's fighting for. That's probably his ceiling, in all honesty, at the moment. I've just been so impressed. I mean, what he does best is just impressive. I mean, when you guard him at the top of the key, he's going to blow by you. When you guard him in the post, he's going to do a really good job of – I mean, he's got good footwork, good mechanics. And people don't realize that Kevon's only been playing basketball since his junior year of high school. He had to go to junior college because he hadn't been playing basketball long enough. So he's really – I think he's just improved so much in just the short time he's been playing junior college basketball in Memphis. And I think there's another ceiling that he could hit. But, yeah, he has a ways to go.
Talking, of course, with Jonah Jordan of the Daily Memphian. Go follow him on Twitter, @_JonahJordan. Jonah has written about the throwback uniforms that the University of Memphis will be wearing tomorrow. They're going to wear the Penny Hardaway era Memphis State jerseys. And then in terms of other things in this matchup, we've seen the Tigers at times struggle with turning the basketball over on the offensive end. SMU's pretty good at forcing turnovers. Is that something that you think that you're going to keep your eye on?
Absolutely. It could change the game. If they go in, I mean, Memphis is one of the worst teams in the nation at turning the ball over. If they go in and turn the ball over 20-plus times, I mean, they could very well lose this game. I mean, if it turns into a game where SMU's just going down and the guard sees up and Antoine Jones has four turnovers, Tyler Harris has four turnovers, Taylor has three, and Jeremiah Martin has three, it's a problem. I think if that's what the stat sheet looks like at the end of it, they could very well lose the game.
Do you think the turnovers are just the direct result of, hey, man, they got a lot of really young guys that have the ball in their hands a lot, or do you think it's, hey, they're – you know, a lot. Oftentimes they want to push the pace, and oftentimes when you push the pace, with more possessions, you turn it over more?
Combination of both. It's that, oh, they're young and you're playing at a breakneck speed, and then you've got Jeremiah Martin, Kareem Brewton, who the last 2 years have been playing at a glacial pace where you're dribbling, and now everything is fast. Everything is flying up and down the floor. The ball moves at a very fast pace. And they've got to figure out how to play smart and fast and not just fast, because that's how fast teams win, is that they do it while they're smart while they're doing it, rather than, okay, I'm going to make this pass for the sake of being fast. They do it for, I'm doing this because it's the smart thing and the fast thing. And they haven't really obtained that at times this season.
On the other end of the spectrum, if you were SMU, what would you be worried about that Memphis does well that would concern you?
When their ball movement is really good, it can pick teams apart. I think you saw that at times against Tulane, where the ball would just fly around the perimeter. Guys would be driving, and then they'd dish to it. All of a sudden, a wide-open guy would be under the rim, or Tyler Harris would be in the corner wide open. If that ball movement is really good, they could, and guys are hitting their shots. That was the problem late against Tulane. Guys just weren't hitting anything, even though they had open shots. They could get dangerous really quickly.
And then if we get through January, let's say we get the SMU, the Temple, the UCF, the Tulsa game, and then if we're standing on February 1st, the day before they take on South Florida, during those four games, what do you think would be a good record in those four games?
We'll repeat the four games again.
So you got SMU at home on Saturday. You have away at Temple. I believe that's Thursday night. I think it's 6 o'clock local time. Then you have on Sunday, you have UCF. And then on Wednesday, you go to Tulsa. So when we're standing here on February 1st, with you got two home games, two road games. What do you think would be in the A-minus category?
3-1. I think people that they should have no problem expecting 3-1, because I think they can compete with every single person in this four game stretch, and I think they could actually beat all of them. So 3-1 isn't out of the realm of possibilities.
What have you made of kind of the early trend that we're seeing in American play, where it doesn't matter how good the team at home is or how good the team on the road is? It just seems like the home team has had a really distinct advantage thus far.
Yeah, I don't know how much difference there is in teams across the American from top down to the bottom. Like, there's not a ton of difference from team to team in talent, that is, or how good one team is to the next. Like, Wichita State lost to Memphis, then they go and beat UCF.
Yeah.
Or East Carolina loses to Memphis, or they beat Cincinnati, and then they go lose to Memphis. The only team I think there's a huge talent level wise difference is that Tulane team. I just don't think they're very good. I think that Houston's just a really good basketball team right now, but I think they could lose any day in the American too. I think it's no difference. I think that this is the year in the American where there is the most parity, I guess. I don't know. I think there's just the closest.
You know what it feels like to me? It feels like Pac-12 football. Where, you know what I mean? Like, you have a bunch of teams that, like, the talent disparity, like, no one team has such better players that one team can dominate the league. And, you know, you have, like you mentioned, you have Tulane. And then the Pac-12 always has one team that is significantly worse than the rest. But then you factor in a lot of these, you know, the American Conference, a lot of these schools geographically are not that close. And so, because the talent disparity and the variance between teams isn't that great, you wind up with these, how did that happen, results.
Absolutely, and I think you could see one of those Saturday. I mean, it could happen literally any day. I mean, I think UConn's good. UConn went and beat Iowa or beat Syracuse and then got blown out by Iowa the next day. I don't know how they're faring in the conference play right now, but I thought that was a team that was going to be pretty good coming into the year, and they seem to be really up and down. And Tulsa can compete with Cincinnati one day and lose the next. So it's kind of crazy.
Well, no, I mean, to your point, right now they're sitting here, UConn's at 10-8, 1-4 in the league with losses at Tulsa, a loss at Cincinnati in overtime. They beat SMU at home. They lost to UCF at home, and then they lost at South Florida.
I mean, none of it makes any sense.
Jonah, we always appreciate the time, my man. Enjoy the game.
Yes, sir. I'll see you later.
He is Jonah Jordan of the Daily Memphian. Again, make sure you go follow him on Twitter, @_JonahJordan. When we come back, we'll get into the NFL. And as we wrap things up, then we'll make way for Real Talent with the Jason and John Show. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Right here, coming up at 11 o'clock, Bennett Doyle is going to give you another new money in the new year cash code. Make sure you're listening to 92.9 FM ESPN. For your chance to win $1,000, 7 a.m. till 7 p.m., the top of each and every hour. However, now it's time to wrap this bad boy up. Let's do it.
Now, it's the closing argument.
Yeah, as we mentioned, Jeff and I were discussing earlier in the show, spirit of full disclosure.
Yeah.
There are very few times that Jeff Calkins truly shocks me. Like, he's always
he's pretty predictable.
Well, no, I mean, like, he's obviously always said things that, like, I don't think about, or he... Like, he clearly is very articulate, and he has unbelievable ways of expressing himself.
That's why he's speaking today for a whole high school.
When he, the high
the
school.
Pardon me, your alma mater, MUS.
Please. Better than you since 1893.
Shouts.
But today, when he came in with legitimate statistical analysis of the conference championship games for the NFL,
yeah.
I was truly stunned. at one point I wanted to be like, okay, first off, I go, are you reading my notes? Like, what? Like, truly stunned.
He's really good on the NFL. It's a shame that he has to suffer through the Buffalo Bills, and now you get it thrown right in your face with this Patriots Chiefs matchup.
Not great for him. It's the ultimate. It's the ultimate Sophie's choice for
just
him.
A piece of crap just, game for him.
Does he has to root for the quarterback that truly gives him pain because that could have been the Bills' quarterback. But hey, Josh Allen's like the best running quarterback right now in the NFL, not named Lamar Jackson. All right, let's take a look at
who do you have on that game?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Let's take a look at what matters. Let's look at the gambling information.
Let's do it.
All right, currently right now the Chiefs are about a 3-point favorite. That line, I beg your pardon, it's down to 2.5.
Oh, boy.
So if you're looking at the ticket money, right now 45% of bets have been placed on the Patriots. However, 47% of the total money is on the Patriots, which suggests a slight lean to some sharp money, some sharp bettors that have been betting on the Patriots.
Yes.
Versus
I like
taking
it.
The Chiefs.
It's I the love the Patriots in this one.
It's the ultimate catch-22. My brain says the Chiefs.
No.
My brain says the Chiefs, and here's why my brain says the Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Pats have not been a good road team.
No.
But I would rather bet on the Pats and lose than bet on Kansas City and then have it be like the Chargers game last week where you're just done 30 seconds into the game.
Yeah.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, I just don't know how you bet against New Orleans at home under Breeze with Peyton as the coach. There's a reason why they're 6-0.
Yep.
Even though I love the Rams, I just – man, give me the better quarterback. So I'll take Brady. I'll take 2.5 points. Heck, I'll take that money line. If you can get the money line, I'll take that money line. And then
I'll lay three with the Saints. What's coming up
next? Here's what's coming up next.
Yeah, and a big weekend with the Martin Luther King celebration on Monday, and we'll be broadcasting that game. Mark Spears joins Jason and John at 11:25, and he'll be speaking as part of that on the 20th. That's Sunday. The rundown at noon, of course, you got cash codes every hour. Parrish is going to join him live from Duke at 12:25. You are hosting today for Eric. Thank you, sir. Joe Mullinax joins today. And in addition to the show, we're going to talk NFL with
Eric Edholm.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That's at 2:25, so yep. You can get some wagering information at 2:25. We've got a quick GP show. Matt's hosting it. Dan Wolken joins us at 4:45. Gary live at 4. He'll be in Durham for that as well. And then we'll get the Grizzlies game on from Boston at 5:30, sir.
Many thanks to Jeff Calkins. My thanks to Jason Smith, to Chris Arrington, to Jonah Jordan, to Brad Carson for keeping this bad boy.
Quick plug tonight, and since I'm the de facto Cardinals fan, we do have the caravan event for listeners tonight for free at AutoZone, so there you go.
You know, hey, from God's team.
Yes,
from
it is.
From God's team. However, now, I got to make way for real talent. Jason, John coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.